podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Fix with me, Jamie Holm. Delighted to be back after a week off where I spent far too much money at Centre Parks with the family. Phil was off buying himself Dejan Lovren shirts in Croatia and Keith was working on his tan in Salou. But we're now able to be back and talking about proper competitive football. So tonight, our agenda is action-packed. To be honest, Gav nearly killed us when we when we told him how much we're going to try and get through. But we are going to try and cover our centre-backs, the impact that they have on the team, our squad depth, the much-maligned Naby Keita and his role within the squad, and whether the media are writing off Liverpool this season. And joining me to discuss all of that and probably a little bit more, we have Phil, Gav and Keith. First things first, Phil, Keith, how was your holiday, lads? Good to have you back.
Ah, oh, great.
Yeah, Liverpool great, shirt up in the... Is that got Lovren on the back there, Phil, on the on the back of the Liverpool shirt?
Nah, that's a bit before Lovren's time. But I tried to get a Lovren jersey when I was in Croatia. You would have thought it'd be handy enough on one of the stalls, one of the knockoff jerseys, but they didn't have any. They had Modric, Perisic, Livakovic, Rebic. I asked for Lovren, and the woman on the stall said she could get me one, but she never did.
Oh, nightmare. Devastating for you. Keith,
yes.
I commented on your tan before we came on air, mate. You're looking fantastic.
Feeling fantastic, I have to say. Good to get away to the sun for a while, to get away from Dublin. It was great. It was weird, surreal getting out of the country wearing masks. I don't know what Croatia was like, Phil, but a lot of mask wearing in Spain. Took a bit of getting used to in the heat, but enjoyed it. Nice.
Yeah, they don't wear them in Croatia.
No, not going in for all that carry on. Love it.
I've been here covering for Keith. I told the lads on the show last night, he didn't even put in a request for him for holiday. He just pissed off on Sunday and said, listen, I'll be back when I'm back. Go fuck yourself. Fair enough. You know that way. No, nothing's happened. Just Liverpool are back and well, we're all working hard. That's about it. There's nothing else happening. Played 9 holes of golf on Monday morning.
How'd you go on?
Good. I took 3.5 weeks away from it, and it worked. That's all I'll say. I'm not giving anything else away.
Golf makes no sense, though. Like, it makes no sense to me. Like, yeah, you can get through the first 9, and I'm like, I think I'm getting this. And then the next time, it's like, it's the first time I've ever played golf.
That's why I went home after 9. It's like Andy always says to me, golf, you only have a length of golf. You don't have it all the time. You only have a length of it. And he's dead right, because 1 week you're great, and 1 week... There's no point in having the clubs in your hand. You might as well be going around with a hole. You know, that's sort of way. So it's just one of those. But no, back 3.5 weeks out, but back with the golf. So that's all good.
Now, most importantly, Gav, away from the golf, has to be said, how good was the first weekend of Premier League football? There was some entertainment, not just Liverpool, but specific now, across the board. It felt like we had proper football back for the first time in a long time.
It was brilliant, I have to say. You know, you know, Brentford were up first against Arsenal, who we'll get onto later, thank God. And, you know, the quality of the game was good, but I think the whole, you know, even the presentation, I don't watch a lot of Sky before and after games, so they don't do anything for me. But I kind of made the effort to kind of sit down about 20 to 8 or whatever, 20 minutes before, you know, just to see what the buzz was like. I think, I missed Martin Tyler doing an interview, which was great. But like the buzz around the place, and Brentford being in the Premier League back, the stadium's only a year old, you know, they're real underdogs to get a boost with Lacazette and Aubameyang being out, and they were good value for that win, and it was great to see, you know, like literally grown men in tears at the end of the game, first time they've ever seen Brentford in top flight, and that was kick-started it. Then, you know, Bielsa turned up and forgot to play a midfield at Old Trafford, and you know, it destroyed them. And then Liverpool turned up later on that evening and just went about their business, which, do you know what, a 3-0 when you go about your business on the first day of the season, I think is much better than a 5 or 6-0 romp. That sounds a bit stupid, but sometimes a 5 or 6-0 romp can be a bit, the other team are just diabolical, whereas Norwich tried to do what Norwich do, and Liverpool just never come out of neutral for me and won the game, which was really good to see.
Phil, you played a little bit of catch up and you were watching the game back earlier today. What were your thoughts of Liverpool? Before we dive into, I suppose, some of the main talking points off the back of the game and obviously the impact that'll have moving forward, what were your main thoughts on the match?
Well, obviously great to see Van Dijk back. I think people are questioning how long will it take before he gets back to full fitness. But the beauty of Van Dijk being the Rolls Royces of a centre half, he can play in second and third gear. He doesn't have to. He's not a combative central midfielder that if you have a cruciate injury and you're coming back from it, you know, you might be full-blooded going into tackles. Van Dijk tends to play in the armchair a lot because he's just that good. So it was just great to see him in there pinging a few balls out to the wing. Trent Alexander-Arnold looked on it from the start. Tsimikas started well, got forward a few times. His delivery was good, but then just faded as the game went on and gave the ball away a few times. And the encouraging thing was you could see he was annoyed with himself, which shows that he actually cares. It's not like some players that just give the ball away and they almost are indifferent to it. He'd be working on it the next time, but ultimately it looks like Andy Robertson's coming back a lot quicker than we thought. Jota was quiet. He took his goal well, but he had a little spell in the second half where he went out on the left and he kind of came to life a bit, but then Klopp took him off for Firmino. But plenty to be positive about. I know we're going to get on to Keita later on. I thought he went about his business very well. I think when it comes to him, people have really high expectations because of the price tag, but this is his fourth season and we're still waiting. So I can see why people will judge him differently. And I know we'll get into more detail later on, but all in all, pretty good performance and nice that Alisson kept the clean sheet as well.
Keith, one of the other things that's come out of the, I suppose, not just the Liverpool game, just football in general this weekend, is tackling is now back. You're allowed to tackle people again. And we don't have silly people drawing silly lines on the pitch and telling us a toenail is offside. I mean, the game felt a lot less disrupted and it certainly felt like contact didn't equal fouls or penalties.
Yeah, it's one of the big things that's annoyed me over the last year or so with the VAR thing was, you know, it became a situation where every contact was deemed a foul. And that's not the case, you know what I mean? Like, you can make contact without fouling someone. So it got to a stage where players knew, well, he's at the touching on me. If I go down here, VAR will check this, it's going to be a penalty. And it became a bit of a joke. I seen Matt had a comment on the screen there. It's good to see the PGMOL sort of getting their shit together. And in a way, yeah, it is. But I don't want to give them any credit either because I felt they were the ones hampering it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's... The other leagues weren't as bad. I'd watch other leagues, and while they're not perfect, the Premier League was way worse than them with VAR. All decisions were taking too long. The lines were coming up. Everything was just a shit show. So, yeah, it's good. The one thing I do hope for with it is that it's consistent and it's continued through the season, and it's not something that gets changed sort of 3 or 4 weeks into the season and there's a contentious one and they start sort of panicking and cacking themselves. I hope they hold firm on it and hold strong and continue to officiate it the way it was. Because, you know, Brentford against Arsenal, first game back, promoted side, you know, we played a promoted side. You don't want to play them. It's, you know, first game, there's a bit of a buzz, especially when it's at their place. And fans back in the stadium, you know, it makes a huge difference. And the fact that VAR and decisions, stupid decisions, weren't slowing it down, it did feel like real football again. It felt like proper football again. We said it during the Euros as well, you know, that it felt like proper football. Well, the Premiership is the bread and butter. You know, I don't like international football. I'm not. I've never made it. You know, I've never been shy about saying that the Premier League is where it's at. And to get the fans back and... if we see that consistency from referees going forward, it's going to be a great season.
Yeah, I totally agree. And not to harp too much on about referees, but one thing I found was a massive positive is that Michael Oliver and Mike Dean fronted up on Sky ahead of the kickoff of the first weekend. And we're answering questions and creating dialogue. And I think that's important if this is to continue. It's not faceless people making decisions in hidden away places. People are fronting up and trying to explain decisions rightly or wrongly, but there definitely has to be those lines of communication. So I thought that was a real positive. Now, I want to dive into into a couple of the talking points that come off the back of the game at the weekend. And the first one is our centre-backs. Now, it's obvious for people to say, you know, obviously we've got two world-class centre-backs back and it's going to have an impact. But I think it was really telling in how we approached the game and how the game panned out, just how much of an impact that they have. And Gav, I'll come to you first, because there's one fella that often gets overlooked. Obviously, you know, a lot of fans will gravitate towards Virgil van Dijk, and understandably so. In my opinion, he's the best centre-back in the world. But Joel Matip, I have to say, the guy is a freak, right? He'll get himself injured for large period of times, and then he just strolls back in without any care in the world and puts in showstopper performances, then disappears again. Whenever he performs, he seems to perform at a really high level. And you look at the graphic on the screen, I think we've lost one of the last 39 games where Joel Matip has started. I mean, as the tweet says on the screen, surely that is the definition of underrated. He doesn't get the credit he deserves, does he?
No, but he doesn't get it because he's not reliable enough. It's simple as that. If Joel Matip was more reliable, he'd be quite rightly put up there as one of the, I think, probably in the top four centre-halves in the league, without a shadow of a doubt. And I'm probably being a bit generous to other centre-halves by saying top four. But, you know, I think he averages, somebody said he averages about 12 or 13 games a season. I think it's a bit higher than that. I think it's about 20 games a season since he's been at Liverpool, which is not good enough. You know, and he's brilliant. Like, just watch him. We get on to Van Dijk later, and Van Dijk is just, you know, he's unbelievable. But when you watch Matip and what he does, you know, when he comes into the club, you're thinking, is he a bit gangly? Does he have the pace? Is he strong enough? Because he doesn't look the biggest unit, you know, and you're thinking the Premier League is a bit rough and tumble. It's, you know, it's physical. People are going to get in your way. And they're going to try to put you off by using their body a lot more than they might do, you know, in Europe and stuff like that. But when you watch him play, he played against Bilbao last week. And Iñaki Williams tried to run him down the left-hand side of the Kemlin Road, right? And he just brushed this fella. And this fella is a big lad. He's a big fella. He brushed him aside at the corner of the cop, took the ball and didn't give away a corner, didn't give away a free, didn't get entangled in anything. He literally just leaned on this fella, took the ball off him and strolled back out up from the cop end with it. And you can't, and that's what you see from Matip. He reads the ball game well. He's actually really good with his feet. If you let him run, he'll make you 40, 50 yards up the pitch, no problem. And I thought he was impeccable at the weekend. Like, I can't remember a foot wrong. I really can't. I think he was that good at the weekend, you know. And your only wish for Joel Matip, like, we can talk about his attributes and stuff. I think it's all there. The only thing with Joel Matip is it's just his reliability. It really is. And if his reliability was up, if you told me Joel Matip is going to play 30 league games this season, Liverpool win the title at a canter.
I think the thing for Matip is positional awareness. And like you said, he doesn't look like a footballer. He looks like he's the type of fella, you know, he's not a scrap of muscle on him, but his elbows will just get into you. He's just awkward. You know, his go-go gadget legs just seem to get himself, you know, away from trouble. And I always remember one time where I really stood up and thought, Jesus, I don't give him half the credit he deserves, is when he got stood up by Son. He was playing away at Tottenham's new stadium. It's not White Hart Lane now, is it? And basically he got in a running race with Son down the left-hand channel. And this is Matip coming back into the side after 3-4 months out. And he went toe-to-toe, stepped away, brushed him off, and then walked out with the ball. And as you said, I think the biggest challenge for Matip is keeping him fit. Phil, were you surprised that Matip got the nod, given the fact that we've obviously brought in Konate, you know, for such a big fee? Were you surprised that Matip got the nod?
I probably was, but then if you actually think about it, maybe it isn't that big a surprise, because Klopp is looking at him going, he's available, he's fully fit, play him. Because if you play him, you know what you're going to get. And I think the first three balls that went up towards him, he won all headers, and he obviously came close to scoring as well. So is Klopp thinking, when you have him fit, you play him? Because let's be honest, there's a fair chance he's not going to be fit for most of the season. So when you have the chance, why not play him? Is it a case now that there's more options in central defence? The problem with Matip was he could never string a run of games together if there was Saturday, Wednesday, or midweek games. But now that there is cover there and there's more options, you know, you don't have to play him as much, but you know that he could be 2 weeks out of the team and he comes back in and he'll just pick it up where he left off. So he's a great option. If you got 20 games out of him, I think that would be a good return. And when I say 20 games, you're talking 20 games where he's fully fit. And last season, obviously, because there was such a reliance on central defenders, it was almost inevitable that he was going to break down because it was just too much workload for him. And that's what happened.
Keith, I want to come to you on his centre-back partner. And I think it feels a cop-out sometimes to talk about how good Virgil van Dijk is. And obviously, he's a dominant centre-back. He's pacey. He doesn't necessarily look like he's lost much of that pace. And even if he did, I don't think it'd be a major issue just because he's so good. One of the things that I wanted to highlight, and I want to shout out Sam Maguire and the team at 23 for this, because I had a chat with Sam, particularly around Virgil van Dijk's distribution. Because this was something that was spoken about a little bit last season in terms of when Liverpool were going through their struggles offensively, the fact that it was easy for teams to camp in and we didn't really have that variety in passing range. And but basically what I want to look at here is the fact that when Virgil van Dijk is back in this Liverpool team, and it was very noticeable, I thought, at the weekend, when teams are looking to pen us in, teams are ultimately sort of struggling to build a little bit. Virgil van Dijk, and you can see from the graphic on the screen, the range of his passing, not only short, but more importantly long, where he can clip it over presses, he can ping balls into the forwards' feet. It's such an offensive asset. I'd argue to say it's actually one of our biggest assets in the fact that he can hit a 60-yard ball to somebody's feet and get us on the attack straight away.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it was yourself, Jamie, through a compilation in the WhatsApp group earlier, a 2-minute video of Van Dijk's passing range. And when you look at it, it's outrageous. And the likes of Sam Allardyce and other people have called Liverpool a long ball team. And they play on the fact that Van Dijk hits long balls. But these are long diags, 60 yards into the feet or into the run of a winger, setting up attacks. You know, it's not a hoof over the top or anything like that. He's so intelligent with his passing and his distribution. It's absolutely amazing. And that, I don't think, will be affected. I think the injury, the only thing that will probably take a while to get back with Virgil is going to be that sort of sharpness of committing into tackles. I think he might just back off a little bit and, you know, instead of going over and cleaning someone, I'm not fouling them, you know, just going over and using his body and checking across. I think he might just give himself a yard in case they get a run on him. But that'll come back. Sean, you keep saying it on shows, ACLs are not what they used to be. Players come back from them. They recover a lot quicker and a lot easier. So I would expect him to get back to his level. But even if he doesn't get that yard of pace back, he's got everything else. You know, there's the passing, the intelligence, the composure, like everything with him. We can talk and talk about him, but to see him back, it's one of the biggest pluses because it changes. We've said it before many a time. Last season when we had the lads playing and we had, be it Fabinho plus, you know, Reece Williams or whoever it was going to affect the play because I still say, and I'll stand up with this, I think Fabinho was a fine centre-back playing alongside another centre-back, not when he's the lead centre-back playing alongside some kids. And to get Van Dijk in there, and we touched on Matip, and we've not mentioned Konate yet, but Konate is the exact same ilk. He likes to pass the ball diagonally over the top, and it changes. Joe Gomez, you know, the four centre-backs we have now, when they're all fit, are so complementary to each other, and whatever ones you go with, it's a nice little mix. But to have that distribution that Van Dijk gives you, it is like a new outlet. Because last season we said Thiago comes in and, you know, if teams suss out that we're going to go to the fullbacks, we'll go through the middle with Thiago. And we didn't see any of that because we weren't going to get into the fullbacks because Van Dijk isn't there to hit the passes. And Thiago was playing deeper than he probably wanted to play or than he intended to play him. And it was just a case of putting a plaster over too many cracks, you know. And this season, in one game, and it's only one game, it's only Norwich, you know, no disrespect to them, Dele Smith, all that, loved them. To see him back and doing his thing, I was delighted to see it because it's going to make us so much harder. We say all the time, it pushes us further up the pitch, 10 yards further up the pitch, puts the fullbacks 20 yards further up the pitch, 30 yards further up the pitch even, and it just creates so many more not options for us, but so many more questions to answer for the defenders, the opposition team, and that's what we need. We were too, I wouldn't say pedestrian, but we were too easy to read last year. You know, the fullbacks were getting, and they were doing them silly little clip passes into the box, and that's because they were getting the ball deeper. Do you know what I mean? They weren't getting the ball over the top. Look at the highlights of Van Dijk's passes. Look at how many go into Robertson's feet down the left-hand side. Do you know what I mean? On the run, highest player up the pitch. These sort of balls will make air attack even better. So it's great to have him back. It's great to have a lot of our bodies back and a great start to the season. But Van Dijk, you know, I can't say much more about him because I agree. I think he's the best centre-back in the world. I will be ridiculous and say I think he's possibly the best centre-back we've ever had. And that's after one or two seasons.
I think he's redefining a position, Keith. I agree with you. And if you pull up, I think there's a passing network of Van Dijk, because a couple of people in the chat have made a point, and I'm glad that they did. They said that Jeremiah up on the screen at the moment has said Van Dijk is basically Kroos at centre-back. I think somebody else before had said that he's basically a playmaker playing at centre-back. But when you look at this again, thanks to Sam for sending it in, you look at Van Dijk at left centre-back. Look at everything that's stemming from him. It's not just necessarily long balls, but he's key to everything that we do. So this is where, and Gav, I'll come to you on this. It kind of irks me a little bit because I think people have kind of tried to couple Diaz, as good as he is as a defender, in with Virgil van Dijk, as you know, he's the leader in terms of centre-backs in European and world football. I think this is what separates Virgil van Dijk. You know, not aside from being a defender, this guy can do pretty much everything in possession of the football and is so key to everything that Liverpool do, not only defensively, but more importantly, offensively, as the graphic shows.
Yeah, Diaz is not on the same planet as him. It's as simple as that. He might be a good defender, but Virgil is everything else on top of it. You know, the one thing, that if you watch at Norwich at the weekend, you know, I think Liverpool are brave with the way that Cantwell is, for me, is their most dangerous player. And they decided to be brave against them and push Trent up and use Trent as the out ball. So Cantwell just spent the day jogging up, running up and down after Trent. And the reason for that is because when Liverpool don't play Van Dijk, and this is not a slight on a Gomez or whoever else played there last season, because it was mad. But when they don't have Van Dijk there, one, you think he can press us more because Van Dijk isn't there. But because he's not there, the second reason you can press us is because you don't fear that ball he can hit. You know, Joe Gomez isn't going to take the ball out of his feet like Virgil van Dijk will, or as regularly, and hit those balls that can hurt you and hurt you badly. And I made the point the other night, he's not hitting it to a forward. He's giving it to his right back, who then has all the forward players in front of him to work with. That's how dangerous it is. It's actually more dangerous that it's going to a fullback than it is a forward. That might sound stupid, but the fullback is getting it 30 yards from your goal with all those forwards to work with, and that's where Van Dijk stands out from everybody else. The way to pass, how he chooses them, sometimes he's very basic. Give it to Robertson, get it back. Give it to Gomez or whoever, get it back. Give it to Alisson and get it back. Give it to the centre midfield and get it back. But then he just opens his body up, and it's very rare
if you pull up, actually, we've got an example from the Norwich game which shows perfectly what you're talking about. Because if you look at in the example, you'll see where the Norwich players, Van Dijk has the ball, and they've basically tried to cut off the supply to the midfield and to Tsimikas on the left. And you can see Van Dijk's just about to receive the ball. If you move on to the next graphic, it basically looks at Van Dijk and he says, all right, well, you cut off those passing lanes, I'll just ping a 60-yard ball into Mo Salah's feet. And you can see now, we've beat the press. You've got two of the attackers and one attacking midfielder, or I think that might actually be Trent, trying to join Mo in the attack, and automatically Liverpool are away. I think it was Arteta actually that famously said after an Arsenal game, you can have all the plans in your world, but when Van Dijk's knocking 60-yard balls into people's feet, it's very difficult to plan for.
Yeah, because Ghost says it there. Arteta said it best when describing that VVD, what VVD does. And that instance there that we've seen, you know, what you've seen there is a Norwich team trying to press, right? Or press a fullback, and then it's given to Van Dijk, and he has the attributes, he has the ability to hit you. Now, he's given it to Salah in that case, but look who's right beside him. Trent is literally 10 yards off him, ready to pounce. Whereas if Norwich sit back, right, or drop off, Van Dijk can still do it, but he's given it to his fullback in that position with all those players ahead of him to walk with. He's no one's close to him. And if you're a Man City fan or a United fan or whoever, and you're sitting there trying to tell yourself that Joe Centre-Half is anywhere near Virgil van Dijk, you're fucking lying to yourself. And stop it, right? Your ma wouldn't like it, and you shouldn't be doing it. Because he's genuinely...
I love Gav on the cans, he's great, isn't he?
He's unbelievable at what he does. And it's not even what he does, it's the fact that he's there. You know, I guarantee a Liverpool fans, 3,000 and whatever, Grizz was there the other day, are going into Norwich. And I can tell you they're up. It's a big day because we're all back in football and fans in ground. But there's no way you can't tell me that you're bouncing in there going, and Van Dijk is back. On top of everything that's going on, and Van Dijk is back. So you're bouncing in there going, I've no doubts about this game. And that's what he brings to you. He brings very little doubt. Even when Liverpool are under pressure now, and going back to the last 3 years or wherever he's been with the club, you don't shit yourself. You don't run behind the sofa when Liverpool are a goal up with 5 minutes to go. You just go, he'll deal with it. He'll actually deal with it and we'll probably score again. That's how good he is. He's a phenomenal player. And to have him back, to see him doing 20 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes and then 90 at the weekend, it's literally like, we're not betting this fella in. He's back and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think it was earlier on. It was earlier on, Phil. You'd mentioned Naby Keita, and I want to come to Naby Keita to you. First of all, I suppose, what do you make of his performance? Because it's been strange for me reading some of the stuff online. In that, I don't know why. Probably it is because of his price tag, and as you said before, you know, he became with such high expectations in terms of the type of player he was at Leipzig. But it's been a strange response, I think, to what was albeit a pretty solid performance. And we're going to look at some stats in a moment that support that. But, you know, from trust in the eyes, what did you make of his performance at the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, in possession, he was neat and tidy. Maybe he wasn't penetrating as much as you'd want to see. That was one of his signature things when he signed from Leipzig, that he would take the ball in midfield and he'd glide through and cut through. We've seen him do it a bit, but I think as well, when he played with Leipzig, he would have played in a 4-2-3-1 a lot. And maybe there was thoughts that that could be a formation that Klopp would use, and he could use Keita for it. Was a formation he used with Dortmund. So he played, obviously, as one of the eights the other day. But, you know, it's the first game of the season. And again, Keita falls into that category of you have to let him build up a bit of rhythm. He needs game time. I don't know, out of the four of us here, does anyone see Keita as a regular if the full team is available? I'm not sure if he's going to be part of that midfield three, but if he's fit and available, he's a player that is very handy to have. Now, I think the disappointment obviously is that he hasn't hit the heights that everyone expected, and the real sour point then was the first half against Real Madrid in the Champions League, where it was a big call that Klopp made to put him in, and he was taken off before halftime, which said it all about his performance. He just couldn't get near, couldn't get up to the pace of the game, and he was just chasing shadows. The other day, I just thought he kept it quite simple, didn't try anything elaborate, but I thought his pressing was good. I thought, you know, he threw his body in there a few times, dispossessed a few times, he dispossessed Norwich players. So, you know, it was one of those 7 out of 10 performances, nothing spectacular, but he didn't do anything wrong.
Gav, actually, if you pull up the graphic in terms of the areas that Liverpool look to press, and I'll come to you on this, Keith, because I think you said it before when talking about Van Dijk. One of the things that surprised me when I looked a little bit into the numbers behind the game is I thought that Liverpool, with Van Dijk in the team, with the fact that we can maybe squeeze a little bit higher, I thought we'd be able to press from the front a little bit more. But if you look at the graphic, it actually looks at where Liverpool engaged Norwich. So where did they try to win the ball back? And it was very much in Naby Keita's zone, and I think he was the number one in terms of the interceptions or winning the ball back for us in the team. Are people being a little bit over the top in terms of the criticism that's coming his way? Because I thought, looking at it, trust in the eyes, you know, it looked like quite a, dare I say, a Gini Wijnaldum type performance, where structurally I thought he was a lot sounder than the likes of the Real Madrid game that Phil rightly references, where there was gaps everywhere in and around him. I thought he covered space very well. I thought he won the ball back and just used the ball well, which, to be honest, in a Liverpool system has been something that Klopp has been very focused on, particularly if you look at the likes of Gini Wijnaldum and the role that he played for us.
Yeah, nail on the head there, Jamie. you know, Gini Wijnaldum wasn't brought in as a sort of a metronomic number five type of player. When we got him off Newcastle, he was an attacking midfielder. He was sort of a number 10 type of player. And, you know, Klopp didn't see him like that. And I think Naby, not that Naby has to change his game, but I think the changes, like, personally, I thought he was very good at the weekend because of the way he played. That, you know, Keita is too in and out of games. You know, he'll do something nice. The pressing is the key. The high press that he does where he nicks the ball off a centre-back or a defensive midfielder and he sets us on a quick break. That's the strongest part of his game. The fact he was doing everything a bit simpler, a bit deeper, I thought, you know, was I think was to instruction. And I think that's how Klopp will use him a bit more now this season. I think he's a good player. He's the frustrating thing for me with Naby Keita is he doesn't have that sort of standout moment or standout run that you can look at and say, yeah. We spoke about Joe Matip earlier. We said it on a show a few weeks ago. Joe Matip is a weird player in that he can miss 12 weeks and come in halfway through the first half of a game due to an injury to someone else, and he can hit the ground running like he's never been away and can put in man-of-the-match performances. Naby Keita, unfortunately, doesn't do that. When he comes in, a lot of the stuff gets unseen. So maybe it is time to slightly change Naby's sort of play. Move him back 10 yards, get him on the ball, and just move things a bit quicker, a bit simpler. You know, don't try and force it. Just simple passing if you have to. Cover the channels where the fullbacks are going forward and be a bit more like Gini. And maybe that's what he needs to establish himself. Phil said there, we don't see him in the first-choice midfield. No, and if we sign a midfield player, which I don't know if that's going to happen, but if we do, it pushes Naby further down. But if Naby is fit and he's someone we can rely on, he's an excellent option in there because he's different to what we have. He's, you know, if we ever get the Naby Keita that we thought we were getting, that we've seen for Leipzig, brilliant. We probably aren't going to get that Naby now at this stage, but if we get a Naby that can perform the role of Gini Wijnaldum, which a lot of people didn't like, by the way, you know, a lot of people were anti-Gini's role, and it's only when he's gone that you appreciate how good he was.
I think he got a four, Keith, in his first game in the paper or whatever it was. Yeah, he got a rating of a four in terms of what he did.
They're notoriously harsh with their ratings, aren't they?
They showed all the stats, didn't they? Like his 90-something% ball passing accuracy and all his duels were won.
Probably similar to Naby's from the weekend. And this is the thing, you know, and this is from a team sport perspective, you need players like that. Recycle the ball, particularly in midfield. And it depends on how the game flows. Because sometimes, I always say this on podcasts, manage football games in 10-minute blocks. And sometimes you need to take the sting out of a match. Maybe Norwich are getting up ahead of steam. And Naby just recycles the ball. Or one thing that I think he does very well, and look, I'm not trying to be his biggest fan because I'm certainly not that. I think he hasn't justified the price tag yet, but he has this ability to kind of slink or sort of wheedle his way out of difficult situations, and is kind of like press proof, which is such an asset to have in midfield. But one thing I want to come to you on, Gab, because it's kind of an evolution of the conversation around Naby Keita. It kind of comes into squad depth, because this is something weirdly that has come up quite a lot, particularly from pundits, fans. You know, there's been a lot of mud kind of thrown towards Liverpool in terms of their squad depth. And if you look at the starting 11 that we had at the weekend and the players that we had on the bench, you think we have the likes of Hendo, we have Thiago, we have Robbo, all to come back into this team. If you look at the starting midfield, we have Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Milner. That's arguably three. We're missing our three starters, you would say, in Henderson,
Curtis Jones,
and Curtis Jones. So we're missing a lot of players there. Yet we're still able to put in that type of performance. Do you think the questions that are being thrown at this squad, and in particular around the squad depth, is more around availability, not quality? Because it seems like, certainly from my own perspective, this seems, in terms of quality, it's the deepest that I've known in my lifetime as a fan.
It's a deep-ish squad. But you're calling out now, like on Naby Keita, you have to, when you're talking about Naby Keita, you have to talk about him with a bit of caution. all the time, you know, simply because of the track record he has with regards to injuries and stuff like that. But having said that, there is more players around him that have the same. You know, Henderson is starting to, for me, pick up a bit of an injury record. Fabinho, it's overplayed a little bit, but he has had injuries. Thiago, how many full seasons has he played in the last 5 years? I don't know. I don't read that stuff. I read other stuff. But it's a deep-ish squad, Jamie. But you see, the big thing for me on this is that people are worried after seeing what happened last season. It's actually hit them really, really hard. The scars run deep, you know, the sort of way. So we're waiting on one or two to go, and then you think, here we go again. But the squad depth for me, I think defensively we're good. I still think we're a player short up front, because there's no point in talking about Divock Origi for me. And Shaqiri has been left out of that squad. I think he was left out of a friendly on the Sunday. I don't think he's been training since. So you wouldn't talk about him. And I think in midfield we're still one short. I know you've seen three on the screen there. You see three that, you know, in Henderson, Thiago and Fabinho that can come back in. But of those three on the screen right there in front of you, Jamie, one is 36. And the other two are notorious for being injured. So if everything goes, and this isn't me being over the top over last season, if everything goes to form, you're going to be left with the three that went in the squad at the weekend. Curtis Jones, who's still young, okay, James Milner, which makes five, and the other two that you're hoping stay fit. Now, if they stay fit, that's great. But for me, that's where they're not deep enough. That's where they're not deep enough, and we're taking one of them, you'd say fine. Two of them, you're kind of going, I think it's too much of a stretch. So I'd rather put an insurance policy in there, and simply for the sake of numbers and quality, opposite, you don't want to just sign anybody, but for the sake of numbers and quality, I think one more is needed in midfield, and most certainly one up front.
I got into an interesting debate, and I'll come to you on this, Phil, around squad depth with Phil Blundell this week from the Anfield Wrap, and he made a couple of interesting points, and we'll pull them up on the screen. And he very much spoke around, we were talking about, obviously, the quality that we have, but also, like Gav says, the scars have run deep from last season in terms of the injuries that we had. And Phil made the point that, you know, you could argue you could put five different players into Saturday's team and it improves, maybe six if you rate Gomez more than Matip. He seems to think that people are either paranoid by injuries or scarred by last season, or underrating the players and wanting more from them than is required. And on his next tweet, he makes a point, and this is what I want to come to you on, Phil. If we don't see the type of injuries that we did like last season to key players, so that I mean to the structure of the side, like a Van Dijk, you know, his centre-back partners, Henderson and Fabinho, who I class them as our spine. If they're in the team, everything will be solid, and you can interchange the people around him. But Phil made the point in the week, he said, you know, the expectations on the likes of, let's say, an Ox or a Naby Keita, people talk like they need to be amazing when they don't. They just need to be decent. And I think that's the key point for me, is if we're able to keep a likes of a Henderson, a Fabinho in the side, or a Van Dijk, and the impact that has, it takes the pressure off Naby and Ox and Curtis Jones. They don't have to fix a team like they probably did last season when they came in. They can just come in and do a good job and get us through a chunk of games.
Yeah, and Oxlade-Chamberlain, obviously, one asset he has is he has that ability to score goals. And he had one chance where he blazed it over the bar. You know, he was actually quite good without the ball. There was a stage where Trent Alexander-Arnold had pushed up and Oxlade-Chamberlain had pulled into the right back position. So you got your dream there. You got to see the Ox playing as a right back, Jamie.
You're never going to let me live that down, are you?
But also as well, there was one stage where Norwich broke and Oxlade-Chamberlain was the one that basically got back and stalled it a bit where Liverpool could get back into shape. So I would agree with Phil's points there in terms of they don't have to be 10 out of 10 performances or lighten it up. They just have to be fit and available. And obviously the more games they play, you know, the more confidence they get, where Oxlade-Chamberlain then starts getting on the ball and he starts, I'm going to have a shot here from 30 yards out, which is one of his signatures where we know he can score goals. But I would agree with Gav that the midfield and the attack are the two positions that I worry about. Obviously, if the front four as it is now, with obviously Jota added to the famed front three, if something happens to one of them, then you're short, because Origi, Shaqiri, we don't even know if they're going to be there. Minamino is still at the club, but is he a realistic option? Think about later in the season, the players that go off to the Africa Cup of Nations. Now, they might only be gone for three league games, but three league games, that's 9 points to play for. And if you don't have them, that could be crucial in the grand scheme of things. So I am still hopeful that there's going to be at least one signing made before the end of the transfer window. But obviously, it very much depends on players going out. But I would be hoping that they get rid of some of the players that you just know don't really have a future at Liverpool anymore. What are they doing there? They were there at pre-season. Like, you know, you were watching Origi playing a pre-season, and, you know, it was great when he was on fire, and obviously he was the hero in the Champions League, but he's so far off that now, and he obviously missed a penalty in pre-season. You think back to, obviously it's Burnley this weekend, you think back to the Burnley game last season at Anfield. He's played in one-on-one. And at no stage did I actually fancy him to score. And he shot so early. Yeah, he shot so early. Like, he actually could have brought the ball in about another 6 or 7 yards, but he had no confidence, so he shot early, hit the bar, and obviously we know what happened. Liverpool lose the game. But, yeah, it's we obviously haven't included Harvey Elliott in terms of the squad. So that, you know, that's a big bonus.
Team Harvey, big Harvey fan here.
Yeah, and he got some game time at the weekend, which is great. We're going to see more of him. But, yeah, I can understand why everyone is absolutely bricking it when some of these injuries don't even happen during games. You know what happened last season where the rumours come in and you're like, Jesus, another rumour. And the rumours always turn out to be true. You remember the talk before the Ajax games, like, Alisson's out. And all of a sudden we're thinking Adrian's in goal. It was a massive game. Obviously, Klopp took a gamble. He went for Kelleher, and Kelleher hasn't really looked back since. But those injuries that are happening, they're muscular injuries. I'm looking at that three and midfield that you put up in the graphic, and I'm already in my head thinking, who's going to get injured first between Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain? That's just the way we think, though.
It is the way you think, because it's based on actual hard facts. It's not like, you know, if he gets injured, and you're talking about a fella that's missed three games in 3 years. It's hard facts. That's simply what it is. And I don't think it's an overreaction. If you lose Ox and Keita, and you say to me, the others will stay fifth the rest of the season, I still want another midfielder in. For the simple reason is, if you lose both of them, okay? Now, Harvey Elliott, I think he's a fantastic prospect, but I'm not throwing him in and I'm not relying on him in a run-in for Liverpool. I don't think it's fair on him. Just not fair on him. You don't have to go any further than that. It's the same way with Curtis Jones last year. I think he took too much abuse, and there was too much... He was under too much of a microscope for me as a young player in what shouldn't have been his breakthrough season. It should have been a bedding in season, and there was a lot put on him. All right. But if you tell me that Henderson, Milner, Thiago, Fabinho, and Curtis Jones remain fit for the rest of the season, I still want another midfielder, because the rest of the season you're hoping is going to run to somewhere close to 60 games. And I don't care if they stay fit. You can't run them for 60 games. You simply can't. Not five of them over all those competitions, or the two major ones. You know, the Premier League's 38 games. I think the Champions League is 13 if you win it. If you do anything in the League Cup and the FA Cup, you're close to 60 games. And that's why I want... It's the same with the centre-back situation. You know, I wanted a centre-half in for an insurance policy against something going wrong. You can deal with it, but you need some sort of insurance. And that's where I think a lot of people are getting frustrated over Liverpool haven't signed anybody in midfield yet. And I understand the frustrations. Now, I don't go as far as saying, you know, John W. Henry's Josh should be taken off Albert Dock and never allowed back in. But what I am saying is that I understand the frustration in the fact that it's cold, hard facts with two of those midfielders. And a 36-year-old, and an 18-year-old, or 17 and 18-year-old, and a 20-year-old, you know, and a captain that's 30, 31 that has had injuries. You've got Fabinho that, you know, gets them the odd time. And as I said, Thiago, you don't know what's going to happen. So for me, I think when people get frustrated, I understand them. So going back to the original thing, Jamie, the squad depth is okay. It's deep-ish. But I think two more players, i.e. forward and midfielder, makes it deep.
Keith, I want to come to you before we move on to some stuff around narratives that have come out in the media. And I couldn't do the show tonight without a quick shout out for Mo Salah. And We've got a graphic that I've seen in the week there, and it's comparing Mo Salah to Cristiano Ronaldo across the similar number of games. Yeah. And when you look at the numbers, it's actually criminal how much this guy is underrated. So Cristiano Ronaldo, 292 games, 118 goals. Mo Salah's hit 118 goals in 186 games. I mean, I'm actually running out of words on how to describe just how good this fella is. Not only is he scoring breathtaking goals, he's affecting games. The assist at the weekend was absolutely top notch. It looks like he's got a good relationship with Mane again. All that nonsense talk in the media has firmly been put to bed. We'd be lost without Mo Salah. He is something special, isn't he?
He really is. He really is. And, you know, to compare him with Ronaldo, and some will say it's unfair because Ronaldo was 18 when he went to Manchester United. But still, you know, he was 18 and he was thrown in. He was given the number 7 shirt. There wasn't some bum that he picked up off the streets and we're looking at one for the future. He was brought in basically to replace Beckham and he was putting the team straight away. And when you look at that, it's not like he'd done it in, you know, 6 fewer games or 10 fewer, like substantially fewer games. It's ridiculous. We spoke about Van Dijk earlier about comparing Ruben Dias, and Manchester United fans run to compare Harry Maguire and now Rafael Varane, and City fans run up with Laporte and now Dias. It's always compared to Liverpool players. Trent is another perfect example. Oh, come outside. Aaron Wan-Bissaka has done a cross today. Come outside and have a scrap, you know what I mean? All this nonsense. And Van Dijk, Salah is the exact same. It's, you know, Harry Kane is the top scorer in the Premier League in the last 3 years. When you take Mo Salah's goals out of, you know, all this shit, you know what I mean? If it wasn't for Mo Salah, such and such would be this. If it wasn't for Mo Salah, such and such.
Only Mo. I think it's only Mo is the tagline. Yeah.
It's crazy, like the things he's doing. And look, we can all be critical. I've been very critical of his play at times, thinking, you know, he's not ruthless enough. And when I think about it and I sort of sit back and think, he's not ruthless enough. He's fucking banging in goals left, right and centre. And he misses so many chances. And he's not ruthless enough. And I'm like, you're being a blatant gobshite here, Keith. What are you talking about? The fella is absolutely sensational. He's going in. The numbers that he's doing are just absolutely criminal. But what we're seeing over the last year, what we're seeing is the unselfishness of Salah. It's always sort of been decent that, you know, his assist numbers are decent enough, but we're seeing the unselfishness in the last year, I think, his assists, the type of assists, the true balls that he's putting in. You know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely scandalous what this fella is doing. And we'd all replace him tomorrow. You know, give me Erling Haaland. Yeah, you can have Salah. Give me Kylian Mbappe. Yep, Salah out. Klopp said it about giving players new contracts. You know, we're giving these guys new contracts because if you try to sign them, they're going to cost, you know, you're talking about the 100 million plus. So we have a player there that we're going to try and tie down to it. So I don't think he gets the respect. I'm going to say, I don't think he gets the respect he deserves. I think he's underappreciated even by Liverpool fans. And it's mad to say it out loud. It's mad to think it. I just don't think he gets the credit he deserves.
Phil, one thing we could probably do without with Salah is his annoying agent who likes to rear his head every now and then and put out his not so cryptic tweets. He needs to work on them a little bit. But, you know, maybe there is an underlying point in some of his tweets in that, you know, Liverpool have been securing the contracts of other senior players. It looks, if the rumours are to be believed, that Mo isn't far away from penning a new deal. It'll be just rewards for a player who fundamentally has changed the trajectory, I would say, along with Van Dijk and Alisson, the future of Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, I mean, not bad for a Chelsea reject. As the day that Liverpool signed him, people were reminding me it was a Chelsea reject. And I said, well, I actually just think he's an exciting player that Liverpool have signed from Roma, who was banging in goals for Roma, but he's been absolutely sensational, obviously scoring in the opening game for the last 5 years. And actually, speaking of ruthless, towards the end, he tried to lay on a pass for Mane, and you were thinking,
I was so shocked that he did that. Never seen him do anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, when he scored his goal, obviously, it came off the back of the crowd singing his name because he had made that run in behind and they'd won the corner, which led to the goal. And it was almost like they were urging him, right, you've played well, he looked sharp, now is your time to score. Brilliant finish. But, you know, maybe we read too much into it, but you look at Mane coming over to him with a smile. Van Dijk was delighted for him. And, yeah, I think maybe part of the problem with Mo Salah and maybe why some people underappreciate him, you mentioned the agent, but there was a few quotes as well about Real Madrid and
Marca.
You know, the interview in Spain, and that stuff doesn't help, especially if you think of last season was horrendous for Liverpool, and you know, at the time it was something Liverpool could have done without. But do you know what, everyone just looked in better form, better mood at the weekend, and those comments will be quickly forgotten, and he'll sign his new contract. Jordan Henderson will sign his contract, and Liverpool have tied down all their influential players, and it's just about building and trying maybe to add a few more players, and then we'll see what happens between now and the end of the season. But certainly, I've no problem if people don't want to talk up Liverpool, because I suppose, like we've touched on, people are still looking at what happened last season, so there is a little bit of a concern that the same thing could happen. I would be surprised, touch wood, if it did happen again, given the fact they've had a pre-season and this is a proper season now. This isn't the equivalent of, you know, pedestrian football. This is, we got our football back at the weekend. So I think it makes for an exciting season ahead.
Perfect segue from Phil there. It's nearly like he's read my agenda, because I want to talk about the media writing Liverpool off. And I'm going to come to you on this, Gav, because there was a graphic that went round a few days ago. And basically it was the BBC asking all of their pundits, who did they think was going to be in the top four? And it blew me away. And this isn't me with my Liverpool rose tinted glasses, which I sometimes can be rightly accused of wearing. You look, there's the graphic on the screen. I'm going to guess there's nearly 20 in and around 20 pundits that they've asked, and not one of them had Liverpool winning the league. I think three of them had Liverpool coming second. Majority seems to have Liverpool coming fourth. What am I missing something here, Gav? Because Liverpool came third with Ragas Rovers as an 11 for the majority of the season. They were missing arguably some of their best players. Basically, everything that could break broke last season. Liverpool now, and they still managed to come third, right? They were top pre-December. They went on an unbelievable run at the end of the season where they basically didn't drop points for whatever it was, the final nine, I don't know. They were unbelievable towards the running. What is going on with these pundits? Why is this happening? And yeah, I agree with Phil. It suits Liverpool to be underdogs. But were you similar to me? You looked at this and thought, something's not right there. Why are we being so, why are we being ignored?
You shouldn't have asked me with cans on me.
That's exactly why I asked you.
Jermaine Beckford just wants to fucking have a word with himself for a start, yeah. Right? He's down. Did Jermaine Beckford have a spell at Everton?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, well, that explains it all, right? Pat Nevin, I think you know him, Phil.
Yeah,
Pat Nevin wouldn't admit if Liverpool won a coin toss, for fuck's sake, so disregard him. Michael Brown, come on. Clinton Morrison, what?
Jesus Christ.
You know, there's so many of them there where I just go, look, come off it, you know, the sort of way. Like, not one of them to pick Liverpool to win the league. I said earlier the injuries to Liverpool, you know, the scars run deep for some fans. It obviously runs deep for these as well, because I don't know what other clubs have done, right? If you can put so much value on Grealish, Sancho, Varane, okay, and
Lukaku.
This was done before Lukaku, by the way. I think this was done before Lukaku, right? If you can put so much value on them coming in, why can't you put so much value on Liverpool getting the players back? That's my only question to most of these people. You know, they watch the Liverpool team, basically this Liverpool team, when you add in Konate, Jota and Thiago to it, and Lewis Wijnaldum, I think, absolutely take this league asunder from the very, very start. And because of a couple of injuries, basically they're saying, and they just keep saying, oh, well, he mightn't play every game and he might get injured. Yeah, and Sancho might get injured and Varane and Lukaku and Kevin De Bruyne and Grealish and whoever, all of them could get injured. Nobody knows what's going to happen. You have to take it on face value that Liverpool have a fit squad, right? A fit squad, and that's the squad they have, and you go from there. And I'm listen, they're entitled to their opinion, but I'm absolutely amazed that they've asked those 20 people and nobody has come back with Liverpool, because they're simply looking going, oh, there's loads of injuries last season. There's no other way around it. There's no other way around it. There's no, I haven't seen an argument from anybody to say, well, you know, Salah's getting on a bit, or Matt, there's been no footballing sense behind it. No. It's just been, I've looked up how many injured he had last season. This is a Liverpool side with all them injuries last season that came toward. They finished 5 points behind Manchester United, who've added Sancho and Varane, and we've added Van Dijk, Matip, Kanate, you know, Thiago. We've added all these players back in. So I don't get it, Jamie. I don't. But look, that's just the way it goes. They're asked these questions, and half the time, this is why I don't watch build-up and after-match shows, because it's literally just trying to trigger people. That's all.
They're not pundits. And, like us.
Yeah, they don't really trigger me. I'd like to have a chat with them. But, you know, it's one of those where...
Putting a Wan-Bissaka on them.
It's you know, when I watch some punditry, I'm kind of going... even when I do watch it, I kind of think to myself, you're not actually giving an opinion here. There's no way you're giving this opinion here. Yeah, I know what you're saying and I know what you're doing. And a lot of people fall for it. I just want to say, though, Aaron did put in a super chat, and there's more super chats I have stored for the end of the show because they just weren't relevant at the time. But I think the comparison is a bit unfair with Ronaldo when he left the Premier League when he was 24. I think that's fair. I don't really compare Salah to anybody. I just look and go, he's 160 or 70 goal. What did he call them? Goal involvements in 200 odd games, and it's just phenomenal. Yeah. I don't really compare him. He's a Liverpool player and he's brilliant, but Ronaldo was deadly as well, in fairness to him.
Yeah, but he wasn't some kid who left before. Ronaldo wasn't some young fella. He was 24, but he was sort of tearing the arse out of the league. So in some ways, it is a fair enough comparison, in fairness. Before we move off this, Gav, you used to say this all the time. A lot of these characters will be, you know, pundits and ex-players, right, and they'd be the same age as ourselves, or a little bit older, or a little bit younger in one of our cases, but they would have grown up with Liverpool in the leagues. I don't want to insult you. Oh, sorry. I'm the oldest on here, I'd say, so it could be me. But they grew up with Liverpool dominating in the 80s and the 70s and all that, and they sort of relished the demise of Liverpool, you know what I mean? And the fear of Liverpool getting back to the top, I think, stings a lot of the names on that list. And I think a lot of pundits the true colour showed, you know what I mean, when they jumped in to say Liverpool had dusted. And I think it's great. I think Klopp is delighted with this, that we're now the underdogs and we're being wrote off, and Jermaine Beckford doesn't think we'll finish top four. Great.
Phil, out of curiosity, if you were to do something similar with the lads and ladies at Off the Ball, do you think it'd be a similar type? Oh, did you?
We did.
What was the result?
No one's going for Liverpool. Look, the way I look at it, and I don't think necessarily it's a slight on Liverpool. I think that Pep Guardiola has spent almost $1 billion, right? Like, the way I look at it, City should be winning the league every year. I mean, if they don't, then it's a failure. If Liverpool obviously beat them to the league title a couple of seasons ago, that just shows how good Klopp and the team were, that they could actually absolutely kill them in a title race. They had them dead and buried by January. So I can see with Chelsea, obviously they won the Champions League. Are they thinking Chelsea are on that similar trajectory to what Liverpool did, where they win the Champions League, and now they've signed Lukaku. Now, Lukaku's been banging in goals for Inter, but then I hear Tuchel saying last week, yeah, you know, we've lost Giroud, but now we've got Lukaku who can be that target man. Has nobody watched Lukaku? He's a terrible target man. He's like a trampoline when the ball is played into him. You have to give the ball in when he gets the ball at his feet and he's running at you. That's
has to be facing goal.
Absolutely. And then he's scary. If he's running it, he's an absolutely scary prospect. Manchester United, yeah, they signed Sancho and Varane, but they still have problems in midfield. But I can see why people are thinking yeah, Liverpool may have peaked when they won the league, so they're afraid to think that they can get back to those levels. So I can understand why people aren't picking Liverpool, and maybe a lot of people feel like they were burnt by Liverpool last season because a lot of people went for Liverpool. I went for Liverpool last season, and I was made look a right mug. So this time I said, do you know what? I'll put them City this time. And if they don't win, and Liverpool, who I put second, win, then I don't really care.
Oh, I love the reverse psychology.
I love it. I love it. Right, we got two things that I want to finish on. And this is something that we're going to... So before we come to predictions for the Burnley game at the weekend, we're going to do something each week where everybody on the show will give us who they believe to be their winners and losers of the game week. You can pick a player, fans, you can pick anybody that you want and give us the reasons as to why they are winners and losers. So Gav, I'm gonna come to you first because you've been looking forward to this bit, mate. I can see the grin in your face.
Yeah. What do you want?
Who's your winner? Go
Paul
winner
Pogba.
First.
Ooh, right, shadow okay. Because what's going on with him and Graeme Souness is fucking comical. You know, people literally, if Paul Pogba does anything, nobody wants to even watch the goals or the assists. They just want to ring Graeme Souness and ask him what he thinks of it. And Souness just goes, I'm not fucking talking about him. It's absolutely insane. But Paul Pogba, I think, is the winner of the weekend. I thought he was very, very good. You know, I really did. I thought he was very, very good. And don't get me wrong, I think Leeds were literally played right on midfield. I think for all the credit Bielsa gets, I think he was so naive going in there at the weekend. You know, so naive the way he goes in, and he was letting his midfield be overrun. And against any side in the Premier League, if your midfield gets overrun, teams have quality to hold you. You know, especially if they're getting through a midfield so easy. But Pogba is a really, really, really good player. You know, Fernandez, for all the abuse he gets, and rightfully so at times, he's a good footballer. You know, and you know, they have got good footballers that will hurt you given time. And I think, you know, when you see United struggle, it's because they're not given time, it's because they're hurried, it's because they're outworked. And Leeds done none of that. And Bielsa was very naive, and he gets loads of plaudits for the style of football he plays. But I fear for them if he continues the way he's going on. Because a bit like when teams come up and they catch you by surprise and they'll get maybe two thirds of a season out of it and people start to cop them, but they'll survive and they'll be fine, and the next season they struggle badly. Sheffield United come up and surprised everyone and were flying. I think they were fifth in the league going into before the lockdown. Do you remember they were really flying, and then they just fell apart with the last eight games of the season and finished 11th or 12th, and then everyone copped them and they were appalling, and they knew what way they were going to play them, and they watched them and they figured them out. And I think it might be the same for Leeds. But overall, I just thought, as poor as Leeds were, Pogba still had to do what he done, and he done it. And he done it very well. And I think it showed that if you give him space, he can hurt you. There's no doubt about that. And he was given space, and he did hurt him. And I thought, over the weekend, I think Salah was brilliant. There was other good performances over the weekend as well. But I thought, you know, given the chance, he took it by the scruff of the neck, and that was Paul Pogba for me.
And I have to say, before we go on to your loser of the week, which I know you're looking forward to, I think for me, you know, it's easy to throw mud at poor Pogba at times, but the quality of his passing, like, you know, as you said, if you give him time, the ability that lad's got and some of the balls that he played in were absolutely exceptional. So I agree. That's a good shout. Now, Gav, go on, mate.
Before we move on, Keith. I'm not letting the Bielsa slander go.
I forgot you were on. Talking away with that.
I think Leeds will be fine this year because I think Bielsa played the exact same way last season. He got humped at Old Trafford. He'll go in naive in all the away games against the big teams when they get beaten, and he will slaughter the shit teams below them. The top four or five teams will bounce off Leeds, I think, in their home games. But Leeds will pick up points. He doesn't change how he plays. So it wasn't a surprise the way he went in. I get what you're saying, like the selection that left him a bit exposed. But I just think that's how he's going to play it. I don't think Bielsa.
Yeah, but if he doesn't change it at all, Keith, you're giving decent sides a year's case work to look at.
I know,
at.
You but
know
when
the
you look
way?
At like Calvin Phillips to come back into the midfield, and you know, players will come back in that weren't in there. So I just think, you know, it was all, as much as it pisses me off, and it must piss Leeds fans off with the fact that United and their big rivals, I just think that's the way he plays, and I think they'll be doing enough against the other team. So I'm not having Bielsa slander. We'll leave it at that because we've a show to get through.
Okay, well, you're just gonna have a big row.
Ellen Road as well. Ellen Road.
Yeah, Ghost says it's there. Yeah,
it will be absolutely. Like, my dad's a Leeds fan, and I said, "Look, we have to go to Ellen Road this season to see them play before Bielsa leaves, because the place will be absolutely hopping."
Yeah, the Premier League is definitely better for Leeds and a packed Ellen Road.
Yeah, it's picked up emotions, isn't it? That they've held for a year now, and it's gonna everything first game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, handy one.
Lovely.
Come on, Bielsa. After all that,
so come on, Gav, give us your loser of the week.
It's Arsenal Football Club, and I think are we making this a regular thing?
No, every week, mate. Yeah,
you can probably just record this and just I can go for a smoke next week when it's Arsenal again. I've always said it on this podcast, and people know I'm intrigued by Arsenal, because for me, when I was growing up, you know, Liverpool, United, Arsenal were the three big ones, and they were a very classy club, Arsenal. And you know, they didn't play the prettiest football, but who cared? We didn't play the prettiest football under Gerard Houllier and won three trophies in a season. Arsenal won games, and then when you seen them bringing Ian Wright and stuff in the early 90s, you went, oh yeah, Ian Wright was brilliant. I loved him, everything about him. But when you watch them now, 50 million quid on Ben White is fucking madness, and I don't care what anybody says, it's madness, all right? They went to buy Basuma and came back with Ben White. That's what happened. They've been linked with, as I said, Basuma. They've signed a couple of players, and now they've gone back
in for Ramsdale now.
Yeah, 30 million for Ramsdale is just off the charts mental. If I said to you, they clearly have 24 million plus 6 million add-ons around to spend on a goalkeeper. He's not in the first 50, I think of, you know. And
they let Martinez go, just to add.
But the Martinez thing was over Leno, so that's a kind of just an afterthought for me. But when I watched them, I watched the game on Friday night, because it was Arsenal's first day of the season, and it was Brentford, and I knew. I just fucking knew. But when you watch them, and he's still doing it, he's still standing on the fucking sideline looking at random things in the stadium instead of watching what's going on the pitch.
Nice stadium.
He's not fit to be the manager of Arsenal Football Club. I'm going to say it now. And he'll get beaten at the weekend, I think, and he should be sacked. It's as simple as that, because I don't know what he's building. I don't know what he's trying to do. They don't look like they've any shape. He's handed a young flit, the number 10 short, who's really good, by the way. But he's basically put Ben White at 50 million to be his main man at centre-half, and he's made Emile Smith-Rowe his number 10, okay? And he's going to damage them two players, for me. He's going to damage them in a big, big way. And now, after all the talk of this player and that player, he's gone back for Martin Odegaard. He's going to spend a lot of money on Odegaard. So he has no vision. He has no vision. If he had a vision, he would have signed Odegaard last season. But he brought him in on loan because he couldn't get anybody else. And what does he do? He's all summer to do what he wants, and he goes back and he signs Odegaard. They're a shambles, Jamie. They're an absolute shambles. And I don't like Chelsea winning most weeks, but I hope they absolutely hop off Arsenal at the weekend, because the quicker this club comes to their senses, is the better, in my opinion. He was given the job as a PR exercise, and that's all it was, because he has no credentials as a football manager, none. I don't care if he wrote the fucking team sheet for Man City every week and went into the referee's room and done everything all week. He has no credentials to be the manager of Arsenal Football Club. And I always seem to get really annoyed over this, because I do see Arsenal as a classy big club, and I just look at them and go, what in the name of Jesus are you doing? And they don't know is the answer. So Arsenal are the losers this week, and tune in next Wednesday when Arsenal be the losers next week as well.
Do you know when we finish the shows and we're like, oh yeah, I wonder what section we can clip of this show. I think we just got 4 minutes of gold.
Yeah, clip that and send it to Troops. And we'll have a discussion on it. He'll probably agree with me though, in fairness.
Yeah, probably. Phil, I'm going to come to you next. Winners and losers, please.
Well, I go on the opposite side of Gav in terms of the other involvement in that Arsenal game, and that Brentford, because obviously Brentford back in the top flight for the first time in 74 years. Place is absolutely hopping. I was absolutely buzzing watching the game, because that atmosphere, the build-up before the game, the performance as well. They're a very well-run club. They play good football, but they show they can mix it up as well. And you only have to look at the second goal.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Classic, classic throw-in. If you only switched on, you'd be thinking you were watching Stoke from a few years ago under Tony Pulis, a red and white striped team. Exactly. Red and white striped team, putting it in the mixer from a throw-in, causing Arsenal all sorts of problems. And even if you think of the Norgaard goal, going back to what you were saying about Arsenal, not one of those Arsenal players complained about the foul on Leno. Not one of them went to the referee to even put a seed of doubt in the official's mind to say, actually, we should check that. Because Pontus Janssen basically wrestled Leno up against the post and nobody appealed it. And that's going back to why Arsenal are just so weak. But in terms of Brentford, of the three that came up, we were asked to pick our relegation candidates as well. I think Norwich are going to go back down. They seem to be quite happy to accept that.
Way too naive.
Watford, they had a good win. They counter-attacked Villa very well. Brentford, I would have a bit of hope for, because they show that they can play a few different ways. I like Thomas Frank. I thought Ivan Toney, he looked at Arsenal the other night and he thought, I'm going to bully you. And Mbeumo as well, the same. They got on top of Arsenal. Once they got the goal as well, the old Liverpool connection, Sergi Canos with the first goal of the season. And the place is absolutely rocking. Grown men crying because they've never seen Brentford play in the top flight. So I just thought they had to be the winners of the weekend. Because
they had me on Hey Jude, Phil. I'll be honest. Once that stadium was rocking with Hey Jude, I was like, I'm a Brentford fan now. That's it.
Absolutely. To be honest, I was watching the Super Cup last night thinking if Liverpool side Bellingham, Hey Jude would be every weekend.
I'm in. I love that.
He happens to be a bloody good player as well.
Yeah. Loser. Who's your loser?
Harry Kane. This is
absolutely... lunch now. can we all have a go at this?
So Harry Kane is obviously the darling of English football. The guy has been diving for years. This is even before Mourinho got hold of him and told him to be streetwise. This is before he had his little trick of where he backs into you and he nearly breaks your back and he gets a free or a penalty in this. When you think back to the Lallana incident last season, he declares himself fit for a Champions League final, the biggest game in the club's history, modern history anyway.
Yeah.
He clearly wasn't fit. We know as Liverpool fans, when we saw Kane was starting in Madrid that night, you may as well light the cigars. This game is done. You think back of even the time that he tried to claim that goal off Christian Eriksen. He swore on his kid's life. It was like, Jesus Christ, just to win the golden boot. And,
why you never swear on your kid's life?
No.
Yeah. No.
Even if you think you can get away with it.
Yeah. Even if you don't like the kid. You just don't swear on the life.
No. And then obviously he's decided, I want to get out of Spurs. He did his little PR exercise with Gary Neville on the golf course before the Euros. If you look at the players that played for England at the European final, himself and Henderson were the only ones not involved. But obviously we know Henderson carried an injury into the Euros. And there he is today posting a picture that he's training on his own. He hasn't travelled with the Spurs squad to play the Europa Conference League qualifier tomorrow night in Portugal. And then to rub salt in the wound, the team that he wants to join are beaten by his current team, who showed they didn't need him. And the whole stadium is chanting his name, but not in the way that he's used to. And that also Tanganga got the Harry Kane treatment, or the old Harry Kane treatment, where they sang about him being one of their own. So an absolute shit show of a weekend for Harry Kane. It's been a PR disaster. His brother has made an absolute hames of it. Had he ever heard of a release clause? Gentleman's agreement. It reminds me of when you used to watch those VHSs and your man used to say, oral contract, not worth the paper it's printed on. Yeah. And he's now in a situation where he's probably going to have to come back with his tail between his legs and play for Spurs. And
or tell Spurs publicly he wants to leave.
And then
This is your issue, isn't it, Gav? Is that he hasn't? He just hasn't got the balls to say.
Yeah, because Harry Kane is all about ego and legacy. Harry Kane wants to sit there and say nothing until Daniel Levy gives up. And Daniel Levy, as much as people hate him, and if you're, as I said the other night, if you're a Liverpool fan and Liverpool are trying to sign whoever off Spurs, you're thinking Daniel Levy is a prick. He will not let this go. But you're not. You're watching it going on with Man City, so you think fair play to Levy. He'll get his number. Whatever number he has in his head, he's going to get for Harry Kane. And Harry Kane is hoping to sit there, say nothing, and say, well, the club accepted a bid for me and I left. When in reality, he just should come out and say, I want to join Manchester City. Because we all know what's going on here. But he's afraid to lose the legacy. The legacy's gone already. The interview with Gary Neville, the legacy was on its knees. And the fact that, to compound that Gary Neville is going around doing road shows and any other show he can get on and trying to talk about how Harry Kane is great.
He's ambitious.
It's actually more damaging. Gary Neville opening his mouth and defending Harry Kane is more damaging than Gary Neville saying nothing for Harry Kane. It's just tell them you want to leave. Fuck the legacy, because you're going for the money and you're going to try win trophies. The legacy, I mean, fuck all. You'll get a legacy at sea. You know, there'll be 40 of them outside the ground when you sign, and there'll be loads of balloons and stuff.
Do you know what I loved about that? How much Phil enjoyed saying all those things about Harry Kane. You could see the smirk in his face.
I'll tell you why, because for years in the office, I've been saying this about Harry Kane, and people think, Jesus, amazing how angry you get about Harry Kane. Like, you know, he's a modern professional, great striker. You know, he's Captain Kane, and I was like, lads, are you not seeing this? Like, so, I think we're starting to see the true colours now of Harry Kane. And look, he's a great player and he's a great striker. But if Spurs get the 150 million, take it, reinvest it, let him go to City, and you know, he'll probably win trophies. But it won't be the same for him. If he had won a trophy at Spurs, if he had won the Champions League at Spurs, that would have meant more to him than three Premier League titles at Man City. But obviously, that's not going to happen with Spurs. They're not going to win titles. But he can go to Man City, and that's it. I thought before this all happened, he was going to stay at Spurs. He was going to beat Jimmy Greaves' record, and he got down as a Spurs legend. But that's gone now.
Yeah. Like Free Worldy says there, what legacy? He hasn't won a sausage. And that's fair from Free Worldy. What I'm saying is that in his own mind, he has this huge legacy. He has this huge legacy of, you know, like Phil said there. Sports captain, you know, captain them into the new ground, you know, scored all these goals, record this and record that, goals wise and seasons and golden boots or whatever. But this is a fella that fucking took his golden boot and something else on holiday with him. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? He took them out of a bag and started taking pictures of them at a pool. Mad joke he is.
So I'd probably do something like that.
You would. You know what I mean? You brought your football boots and your cabin TV jersey down to centre park, for fuck's sake. But, you know, it's just insane. And it basically comes down to lads that Harry Kane will not come out and tell Spurs publicly, the fans, that he wants to leave the club. So he'll be sitting holding tight, hoping that the club make the move and it makes it easier for him. That's all it is. It's an ego thing.
Keith, winners and losers.
I'm going to give me loser for some change in it on the back of sort of the Harry Kane bashing. But it's around something, and I think this was on the agenda, we didn't speak about it. It's the media narrative that comes out about certain things. So the Harry Kane narrative is, you know, he's a hard worker. Harry Kane came out and done an interview. I never refused to train with Spurs. Well, he obviously did, because all the Spurs journalists and all are saying what's happening. So people aren't stupid, you know. But he gets a free ride off the press. We saw the other day Jurgen Klopp on a press conference and, you know, spoke about other teams' spending habits. And, you know, he's saying, you know, Manchester City and Chelsea, we know how they do their business, and PSG, Manchester United, I'm not too sure. And certain journalists, I think, ran with this. And guys in The Athletic that cover Spurs, City and cover United, sorry, and cover Chelsea were quick to point out, you know, oh, well, Mr. Klopp, this is how, you know, the thing is done. And I just think, you know, I watched Klopp's press conference and I sort of grasped what he was saying, in that he was, you know, we all know City and Chelsea have, you know, sugar daddy owners, let's say, but Liverpool and what you said about Manchester United, I took as in, well, they don't have sugar daddy owners. We don't know their business because he's not involved with the club. And you have, is that the thing there, Laurie Whitewell or whatever comes up and he's dear Mr. or dear Jorgen, this is how. We don't need an explanation of how United do their business. We know what sort of club Manchester United
but,
is. Jorgen
sorry,
Klopp
sorry,
knows can, what they are.
But can I tell you something? It's patronising for a start. Dear Mr. Yeah. Klopp, this is how Manchester United do their business, right? And they're nearly bragging about how they do their business, right? And the business that's being done is being done by the owners of that football club,
yeah.
who in May, they protested against and wanted them out of the club,
yeah.
right? And now, they broke into the stadium to protest, and then when they were allowed into the stadium, didn't bring any of their protests with them.
Yeah.
So for that sort of patronising bullshit to come in from them and the way it's written is unbelievable, to be quite honest with you. You know, I just can't get over what United fans are doing with regards to that. And to say, dear Mr. Klopp, this is how we spend our money and this is how we're great. You know, yeah. Take them back to May when they're having games called off and protests. But when it comes to August, they won't bring. There was no green and gold. It must have been red day, Old Trafford at the weekend.
I love it though, because he's triggering all the right people though, isn't he, Keith? You know, yeah. and I don't even think he meant to. I think it's just been misinterpreted, and the Athletic have probably ran with it and tried to drive clicks however they can.
Yeah, that's what it is. And it's, you know, look, I know journalism, and we have Phil on who's connected with this sort of stuff, right? But it's all clicks now. It's all clickbait. And they took comments that were made by Jurgen Klopp. You know, he's not a natural English speaker. He's a German. It's a second language. And like I said, I could understand what he was trying to say. And maybe I'm wrong, you know, but I listened to it and I took it, what he meant. And yet they're all diving on it because they're trying to deflect away. You know, Chelsea, I think Chelsea are a great run club, to be honest. They buy these young fellas, send 68 of them out on loan every year and then sell them for mad money. Then they buy them back for 97 million a few years later. I'm not too sure on that. Manchester United do the same with Pogba. But, you know, we don't really care. They can't deny. Man City fans get terribly upset about this as well. You know, when you question how they can spend, you know, so many million, yet they don't sell out their stadium, you know, for Champions League quarterfinals and the likes. You know, they get their money. Fair play. That's how they do it. Jurgen Klopp was just trying to point out that, you know, we have our model. These other teams have their models. Manchester United, he's not sure because he's not a part of that. And he just ran with it. They just took it and ran with it. And it's the media narrative now. It's too much click-driven. You don't see enough. And the thing with the Athletic, I'm not trying to dig out the Athletic, right? But when the Athletic came out, it was all moving away from short click pieces. It was all long pieces, you know, long form, take that time to do the articles and informative stuff. And it was excellent. And I don't know, in the last year, I just think it's gone a bit scuttery-guttery. So I don't know. I just found that.
What a saying.
I just made it up on the spot there. Yeah. I just found it a bit unpleasant and a bit, you know, I can understand fans sort of jumping on these narratives in a way because fans are tribal and all that. But when you see journalists diving on it, and as you said, Gav, the sort of condescending, patronising way of, dear Mr. Klopp, dear Jorgen, this is how it's ridiculous, and it's just cheap point scoring. And I know everyone does it, but I just thought that was a bit ridiculous. You have that media narrative, then you have the Harry Kane stuff. So they're my losers on any way of the week. My winner is Liverpool fans, because I want us all to give ourselves a big pat on the back.
Yeah.
Because we got Jorgen back. We got, not Jorgen, Virgil, sorry, we got Virgil back.
Oh,
we got
Jorgen back as well.
Yeah, we got Jorgen back as well, because he was on my list of ones that we've got back this year, because he didn't have a great year last year, forgetting about his personal situation. You know, it was a stressful year that he had. And we have Jorgen back, we've Virgil back, we've got, you know, Matip back, we've Trent back, we've all these lads, we've got our boys back, and we forget how good they are, and we don't give them enough credit. Do you know what I mean? And my winner, look, Brentford, great show. Story of the weekend is Brentford. We went to Norwich and had a routine 3-0 win. It was great. But to see Virgil back playing, to see Klopp back, to see Alisson back, you know, making important saves in a game when he didn't have too much to do. And not important saves, you know, stupid little flappy saves that he likes to do. We love all that sort of carry on when he's slapping balls out of the air. To see all that, I just think it's great, you know, and it's something that Liverpool fans, look, whatever happens this year, we can't be entitled to win a league, right? And this is what we say, you have to earn your league title. You can't just go in and say, well, we deserve to win the league as well, Liverpool, my Liverpool fans. You have to go out and win it. And that's the thing Phil touched on earlier. Man City have been winning leagues, and it's not unrealistic to pick them again this year. If it wasn't for Liverpool pushing them 1 year and then winning it the next, it'd be a farmer's league. Do you know what I mean? So we don't appreciate our own team. And I'm hoping we do now. I hope that the fans get back. The fans are back in the stadium. Makes all the difference. What's the difference in Bobby Firmino this year with crowds there? Because he's a player that thrives on the crowd, on the atmosphere. And he just looked a shell when he was having to play training matches every week. I just think it's good times coming back for Liverpool. A lot of teams will have a lead, so I think lost out not having their crowd last season. But having air crowd, having air boys back, having Virgil, I think we're the biggest winner of the weekend. And that's just my take on it.
Now, learning for next week's show, I definitely need to leave more than 10 minutes for this segment because we've probably done
great
25. I'm going to be watching Love Island here.
The minute you said Harry Kane, everyone just went, right, cancel the rest of the night.
Strap yourselves in.
Yeah.
Right, I'll keep mine short and sweet because I want to get to the predictions before we wrap up. And secretly, that means I want to go and watch Love Island. It's on record downstairs. Okay, so I think people in the chat think I'm joking. I'm deadly serious.
No, he's 100% serious.
it's getting to the business end of Love Island.
Shame on you if you think he's joking about Love Island. Genuinely.
So yeah, let's get this football stuff out the way so I can get to the real business of Love Island. My winner of the week, firstly, I want to say tackling is my winner. Anybody that ever listens to my pointless rants on Twitter or podcast know that I love tackling. I love contact in sport, and the idea that I'm a massive fan of the idea that a tackle can raise a stadium. It can change the direction of a football match. And it broke my heart to see the way that football was moving, in that any contact was deemed a foul. You had players throwing themselves all over the pitch. Midfield enforcers became players that pulled shirts. It just wasn't the same game for me anymore. And the idea, Stu Mack, mate, give it a go. You'll love it. I can see the Love Island abuse coming through. Give it a go, mate.
You'll catch Ben White on a later if you watch close enough.
Tackling is my first winner. I love the fact that it seems to be coming back into the game and we're getting that contact back, and the crowds are thriving on it. But my second winner, I've kind of picked two, and it's just building off what you were saying around slagging off Harry Kane. So I wanted to throw it in. Micah Richards called out, and he's the first pundit to call out the double standards towards Harry Kane. And it was a conversation around Harry Kane missing training and how he was being painted in the media as some type of saint. And he used Paul Pogba as the perfect nemesis to that conversation, in that Pogba hasn't stopped training. Pogba's attitude on the pitch, he's delivering on the pitch. Maybe his agent's done some talking. Pogba said nothing. He's got his head down and he's done his job. Yet the narrative, particularly from Sunas and those in the media, is that Pogba is a problem. Yet Harry Kane gets a free pass for ultimately missing Traven and shafting his club, his boyhood club. And like Gav says, hasn't got the balls to come out and tell the truth. So Micah Richards, hat off to you, sir, for being the first person to call out the double standards to Saint Harry. My loser, Pep Guardiola. Couple of reasons why it's Pep. He has somehow, well, actually, my favorite thing in the whole world is rattled Pep Guardiola. I love how fragile he is. He doesn't handle it well. And Klopp had made comments. In fact, it had rattled him that much that Pep was asked a question that wasn't even related at all to Liverpool. And somehow he managed to start talking about Liverpool's spending. When you see Pep doing that, you know we're onto something. I'm telling you, and this might come back to bite me on the ass. He's fearful of Liverpool. He's fearful of what we are. He's fearful of what we represent. We are everything that Manchester City aren't. And I think that when he looks at us, we're going to be right back at them this season. And I don't think this is turning into a Kevin Keegan bloody rant here, actually.
I love it.
We've got to go to Middlesbrough. No, but honestly, I think if we go toe-to-toe to Manchester City, I don't think they've got the stomach for a fight. And somehow Pep has managed to convince the media that they need to buy £150 million striker. This is nonsense. They've spent £1 billion on players. Coach them. Make them better. You don't need to go and buy a £150 million player. Go and buy a £50 million and develop him. So, yeah, Pep Guardiola, I love seeing him rattled, and long may it continue. So Pep Guardiola is my loser of the week. Now, Love Island time. So let's go around the room and ask predictions for Burnley. And I want two predictions. One, who's going to be the midfield three? And what is the score going to be for the game? And I'm going to come to you first, Phil.
Okay, so Fabinho is going to come back in. I think he might stick with Keita, and I think Milner might hold on to his place as well. I don't know how far Jordan Henderson is away, but that would be it. Watching Burnley against Brighton, one thing.
Oh, he went.
Field's gone.
Oh, he went. Bang on. 92%. He's 92% on his phone. It went.
Yeah, he said 92 minutes.
Bang on. He had 92 minutes left, yeah, and he's bang on. Yeah,
would you believe it? Right, we'll get Phil's predictions and we'll post them up afterwards. Right, yeah. To be fair, that just means that I get more time to watch Love Island here now because we've got less predictions to get around. So, Keith, I will come to you first. Prediction for the game. Phil's just texted us to say battery went. Keith, prediction for the game and who will start? Oh, Phil said 3-1 to Liverpool. He gave us his prediction. So, top man, Phil.
Yeah,
good stuff. Keith.
Good stuff. I agree with Phil's midfield. I think Fabinho comes in and I think Keita and Milner keep their places because I just think other players will be too far. Like Henderson and Thiago, I think, are too far. They need their pre-season and I think they might be a week away or so. So I think it's that midfield as well. And then I think 4-1 to the Reds.
Oh, bullish. I love it. Love Gav, 4-1. What about yourself?
I think Fabinho comes in. I think Thiago comes in and I think Keita plays. I think I know where Keith's coming from, but we've Chelsea the week after and I don't know how many. I don't think he'd be mad about putting, say, Henderson and Thiago in there first game back together. You know, both are first games is what I'm trying to say against Chelsea. I think you'd like to have one of them with a game under their belt. And then maybe bring in a Henderson, you don't know. But you have got Curtis Jones back. You have Harvey Elliott as an option. Milner, there's loads of options there. But I think he takes Milner and Oxlade-Chamberlain out of that starting midfield and he brings in Thiago and Fabinho because I think Burnley are going to sit back and I think we're going to need some creativity and I think Thiago might be the one that will provide that. Along with Keita as well, if he's given the chance. 3-1 Liverpool.
I love the optimism. For what it's worth, I agree with you on the midfield, Gav. I think Fabinho coming back in is the big one. I doubt you'd see Thiago and Henderson in the starting team at the moment, although the reports say that in the behind-the-closed-doors friendly, the two of them absolutely ripped it up. Yeah, I'd go with the same midfield for you. I want to see Harvey Elliott get minutes. I'm going to keep banging this drum. I think the kid's special.
Right, I think you've got a couple of goals up at 20 minutes to go. He gets minutes, and I think that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, for now, I think it is. Yeah. But I actually think as we move through the season, I think he's going to find a way to make those 20 minutes become starts. And I really do think that he can have an impact. I really do think he's that special. But yeah, same midfield as you. I don't think Liverpool concede. I think you're going to start to see a much more solid Liverpool now. I don't think we'll give away silly goals. Touch wood, commentator's curse and all that. I am going to go for a comfortable 2-0 win for Liverpool. So lots of optimism in the chat, which I love. R. Allison just says a 90-0 win for Liverpool, one goal every minute. This is the type of bullishness I love.
I'd be going golfing at half time on the odd chance that we have it sewn up.
I love that. 45-0 up.
Yeah.
Right. That's definitely enough from us. Before we kind of wrap up, Gab, we have so much content, particularly around match days. We've obviously got match day on Saturday. What have we got coming up before the end of the week?
Today is Wednesday. So tomorrow, Carnage is on. Tomorrow night, I know he's going to have a look around stuff around Liverpool. And obviously, he's going to do an actual preview to the Burnley game as well. Friday is Avi and Connor. They have got a guest on this weekend, this Friday night in Sports Unplugged. Go and check that out. It's really good. If you're into all different sorts of sports while having a beer and talking about football at the same time, deadly. Do it on a Friday night from 10 to 11 before you head down the pub for last orders or whatever. Check that out. Saturday, 10:30. We're kick off at 11:30, aren't we? So 11:30, yeah. We'll have the pre-match show. I think it's Chris and Darren on that before the game. And following the game, you'll have Adam and James on. So it's about 15 minutes after the game ends on Saturday, you will have them two on with the post-match stuff as well. And then we're back on Sunday with the Fatback Four. And that feels like a really, really fucking quick week, by the way. It feels like yesterday I'd done the Fatback Four and I'm talking about doing it again now.
Fantastic. Now, to be fair, I have to say the level of content, and I know I'm biased, but yeah, it's definitely gone up this season, and testament to yourself, Gav, for turning it all around. So quick mention to everybody in the chat. I actually missed you all while I was away last week. I was looking forward to getting back on tonight and chatting with everybody. Loads of messages throughout the week. So thank you for your continued support, not only for this show, but for every one of our shows. We absolutely love the community of people that we're building. And as we say every week, we don't just say it for sound bites. We genuinely mean it. It wouldn't be the same without the people in the chat. So if you wouldn't mind being so kind, leave us a like before you go, if you've liked the show. If you don't, tell us why. Leave us comments underneath the video. Let us know what you like. Let us know your thoughts on the show and your thoughts for the season ahead and your predictions for the Burnley game. Just keep your comments coming. We love reading them, and it really does give us a boost and help us get better with the weeks that go by. So with that, I am off to watch Love Island. I am very excited to do so. Please let me know if you're Love Island fans. Let's have a Love Island chat. I don't mind. I'm all right with watch that as well. My DMs are open.
Love Island, watch along.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Right. I hope you've all enjoyed the show. Make sure you enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll be back with you again next Wednesday on the Midweek Fix. All the best. Sports Social Podcast Network.